Good morning, everybody. It is October 5th, 2021. Welcome to the ADK Homeroom Podcast. I am your host, Frank. This is your home away from homeroom. It is certainly my home away from homeroom, exiled as I am from the classroom this year due to the mask mandates. Today, we are going to be talking about the classroom, and we're going to be continuing our series of what kids are actually learning in school these days. If you teach school, if you have a student in high school or in middle school, you might notice that even compared to 15 years ago, things are quite different out there. Certainly just in our state alone, New York State about 15 years ago passed a law that said all students must take the state exams to graduate high school. Previous to that, students were allowed to get a local diploma and pass that way. And the state tests were only required if you wanted a so-called Regents diploma, an advanced form of the diploma. And then in an effort to raise the quality of education in the state, New York State said, well, now everybody has to pass the Regents exams to graduate. Of course, that did not result in better education for the kids. It just resulted in the Regents exams being dumbed down because, of course, passing law did not magically force the students to be better at scholarship. No, it did not. It just forced the people who are responsible for getting the kids to graduate to find a way for them to graduate, which was to make the tests easier. That's just one example from New York State, but the idea holds across most states. I have taught in many different high schools, and I have seen similar results throughout New York State. And although I haven't taught in schools outside of New York State, I certainly have seen the same effects there. So we'll talk about the national curriculum today with the AP exam. And I know a lot of people, a lot of poets actually, will say, they do say to me, they say, oh, high school doesn't matter. I was a zombie in high school. I was just trying to make it through, just trying to survive. Sure, that is definitely true for a lot of people, unfortunately, although high school is a much less savage place than it used to be. Kids are very much nicer than they used to be, at least overtly. There is still some covert meanness going on, some mean girls burn books type of things going on. By the way, a couple days ago was October 3rd, Mean Girls Day. So there's still some of that, but there's nothing like the outward savage violence that you used to see in American high schools. There are hardly ever any fights anymore. No water balloons being thrown up and down the hallways. No duct taping. Nothing like that. It's changed. It's part of the feminization of American culture. And so you still do have some exclusion battles, but even that is much more underground than it used to be. I think it's on the phones, it's in cyberspace, in the physical high school building itself, way better, way kinder, way nicer than it used to be. So here's the thing though, even if you were a zombie in high school, just trying to survive, a mummy groping out a tomb locker every day, wearing those flannel bandages. Even if that was you, then when you found poetry, somehow you came back to it if you're interested in poetry. But most people don't, right? If you look at the data, 90% of what could be a poetry audience leaves. And a lot of that happens in high school because if you look at kids' books, they love poetry, right? Many, 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 many kids' books are poetry. You got Llama Llama, Red Pajama, you have Pete the Cat books, which have some pretty clever rhymes in them sometimes, there is poetry throughout youth literature. And then somewhere along middle and high school, no, it goes away. Your audience leaves you if you are a poet, about 90%. And it is indeed about 90%, right? The National Endowment for the Arts, the NEA, they do a survey every few years. It looks like every 5 years or so, called the Survey of the Public Participation in the Arts. And the most recent one was 2017. And it says that, do you want to guess what percentage of people in the United States read poetry on the regular? Or even a little bit? It is 11%. 11%. That's actually up a little bit from 5 years before that in 2012, when it was something like 7%. And that was the low point. It had been declining for decades up until 2012, and then it rebounded a little bit, about 4% or so up until 2017, 11% of people read poetry. And you have to consider, that includes Insta poetry, right? And Instagram, which is probably even more popular now than 2017, but it still was a thing in 2017. And it's a survey, it's a self-reported survey, so who knows exactly how accurate it is, but it is better than no data at all. So you are losing about 90% of your audience if you're a poet in high school. And you might have been a zombie in high school, but somehow you found a way back to poetry. Most people don't. And it would be great to see if we could figure out why that happens, what's going on with poetry during those years that discourages people, that takes them from their poetry in their youth, right? Like I said, people growing up really like poems. Up until elementary school, poetry and books is very common. And then starting middle school, high school, the audience dries up, disappears. Let's see what we can figure out about that, shall we? So, state level education of poetry, it varies a lot. It varies by teacher. But most teachers will follow exactly what they are taught in college, and most of what is taught in college is just like most of what is published, and it is free verse of one sort or another. It is not metrical, it is not formalist. And I've been teaching for 25 years in the classroom all across New York State. As I said, I usually do a survey of my students and I ask them what poems they're reading. By far, the two most popular poets that I ever hear covered in class are Shakespeare and Maya Angelou. Beyond those two, it's anybody's guess, but it's not going to be metrical, it's not going to be formalist. The kids aren't even learning about that stuff. So, like with novels, and on the very, very rare occasion that they read a nonfiction book, like nonfiction books too, the main focus in these classes is never on the form, it's never on the structure, it's never on the craftsmanship, it's only on the ideas and the themes. Classic example just happened at the end of last year. Kids came in all excited to my class and talking about Shakespeare's Sonnet 18, talking about ideas of temporal nature, what it means to live forever. Is it good to live forever? Of course, they always say no, right? Everybody always says no. That's incorrect. That needs to change for our society to advance. Immortality is a good thing, old age is a disease. But let's stick to poetry here. So the kids would come in and they'd talk about that. They'd talk about summer having, all too short a date. But they definitely do not talk about what an iamb is. They definitely do not talk about how to scan a line. They are taught iambic pentameter, but they're taught that as a unit. In other words, they're taught iambic pentameter has five beats per line, da 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 da. And they are never told what an iamb by itself is. They're never told what the prefix penta is, what the suffix meter means. Obviously, they could figure that out if they thought about it, but it's never even pointed out to them. So they do learn what iambic pentameter is as a unit, but then can they transfer that to iambic tetrameter, trochaic octameter? No, they can't because they don't learn what those individual words mean. And they certainly, right, in Sonnet 18, one of my favorite things about Sonnet 18 is if you look, just like summer being at the peak of the seasons, the peak of the temperature, everybody's happy. And just like that, if you look at the end rhymes there, 10 of the 14 lines have the highest frequency vowel sounds in the language, right? Their A's and their I's and their E's. These are the highest frequency vowel sounds in the language. And that sonnet uses them, right? 10 out of 14, and that capitalizes on it. Only two low frequency vowel sounds, and those are right before the couplet, right? So that generally reinforces happiness, positivity, the almost upbeat tone of the poem, and that's a sort of craftsmanship that is completely beyond what is covered in the high school curriculum. I'll give you another anecdote. So this was typical, anecdotal, but typical. Our valedictorian last year, she would often get to my class early. This was for lab class, and we are a small school. So in our lab class, we only have half a dozen students in our lab sections in the advanced classes. And so she would come in and a little early. Yes, I am self-bragging there. Kids do come into my room to learn. It makes me feel so good. I love it. I love it, right? Like, I love teaching. I love my students. Sometimes I'm like a pirate. You know how the pirate captain sits in his cabin, and at night after the rest of the ship is asleep, he opens up his treasure chest with all his gold doubloons and his pearls and his little tiny gem statues in there and his ivory carvings, and he sticks his fingers in there and he just lifts it out, and all the treasures and the coins just dribble through his hands and rain back into the treasure chest, and he just revels in all his treasure there. I mean, that's kind of what I do every night, except I'm not a pirate. I'm just a teacher sticking my hands into my memories of all these awesome students that I've taught and worked with, and I just let them dribble through my mind's hands, my memories, and they fall back into my treasure chest of these wonderful experiences I've had through my career. I just love it, right? So, yes, I'm a little self-bragging. Kids do come to my room early to learn sometimes, and that makes me feel so good. So, our valedictorian last year, she would come in and we would do poetry before her lab class. And so, what we would cover would be all the things that she had never learned in her AP literature class, in her honors English classes, in her classes like this. And I'm not blaming the teachers, by the way, at all. It's the system, it's what's set up, it is what is tested. So the teachers in English class would be foolish to cover all this stuff because it's not on the tests. We'll get to that. The AP specifically enjoins against teaching these things. I will get to that in a second. I will quote their instruction, their criteria, their scoring guide. So our valedictorian would come in, and she had never heard of accents, right? She had never heard of the idea that one part of a word is accented more than another, and that was important for poetry. She knew that iambic pentameter meant, 10 syllables per line. That's how she thought of it. And she knew that it had a rhythm like a heartbeat. She knew that. But she had no idea, like, if you would take, my life had stood a loaded gun. She had no idea how to look at that as iambic trimeter and look at how a loaded had the accent on the first syllable. And the idea of accentual versus syllabic poetry, counting accents, emphasis rather than just syllables, completely foreign to her. She'd never heard of an iamb or a trochee, anapest, dactyl. She'd never heard of this. And so that's what we would do. We started going over that just from the basics. We had to actually pick out words. And this is our valedictorian. She's a good, smart, intelligent student with an active interest in poetry, right? And in writing. She had done NaNoWriMo, right? That's National Novel Writing Month, twice already. And never heard of this stuff. So we literally had to start with her. We had to start with words like anything or unaware. And we had to look at them and we had to see where the accent was and where the emphasis was and how that could fit into a meter. So that's the state of poetry education in our high school, where our even the best students who are interested in writing, in literature, even these students are so completely unaware of the basics of metrical poetry and craftsmanship in poetry. Because even if you're not, obviously, this is obvious, but even if you're not writing metrical poetry, you still need to be aware of accents in words. But they're not being taught this in high school. And I think that ties into what I was alluding to earlier when I was saying that poets are losing 90% of their audience in high school because kids don't see a lot of what they love. A lot of people love rhymes. A lot of people love meter, and they don't see that in high school. They just lose it. And they lose respect for it. They lose respect for poetry because a lot of it that they are introduced to is just bad. There, I said it. A lot of what they read is just bad. It's not interesting to them. It doesn't inspire them. And they think, what the heck is this? Why would you ever pick up another poetry book again if what you are seeing in a high school, and the teachers care about the kids, the teachers in my school are good teachers. They care about the kids. They want to do what is right for them. But they've been taught that what's right for the kids is to give them this slop, this empty, hollow, void of nourishment poetry that is just a thin word broth. And why would a student who is interested in literature, or even who isn't interested in literature, but just likes a good piece of art, something entertaining, why would they come back to poetry again after seeing what they see in high school? They wouldn't, and they don't. Let's look at the AP curriculum. This is the default national curriculum, right? Jimmy Carter started the Department of Education back in the late 70s, and it's actually in the charter that the Department of Education cannot establish or oversee a national curriculum. And then you're thinking, well, what about Common Core? Isn't that a national curriculum? Yeah, it sure as heck is, but not technically, because what they did to get National Core out, Common Core out there as the national curriculum is, they said, well, we'll form a governor's commission. And all the governors signed on to do it, and all the governors did it together, and it was a governor's thing. And the states did Common Core, technically, if you look at it. Why would they do that, you might ask? Why would all these governors who can't cooperate normally, why would they suddenly cooperate on Common Core? Well, because the feds promised them tons of money. All the No Child Left Behind Act money and the subsequent similar acts, all that money raced to the top. All that money only came to them if they cooperated and got themselves together on the Common Core. So that's how there is a national curriculum like Common Core. But once you get to the high school, Common Core does touch poetry a little bit, but it leaves a lot of room for interpretation, leaves poetry out, basically. It doesn't even touch on what needs to be covered anywhere near as much as the AP curriculum. So let's look at the AP curriculum, which is, as I said, the default because there's nothing else there. Filling the void, the AP curriculum. Teachers teach to this. Even if you're in a normal class, teachers know that their higher end students are looking for the AP stuff. And although teachers normally do teach to the bottom end of their classroom, right, because that's where the pressure is, nobody ever puts pressure on a teacher to get a student to go from 80% to 95%. That never happens. I have never, in 25 years, been in a faculty meeting where anyone ever talked about moving a student from 80% to 95% or from 90% to 100%. Nobody ever talks about the top end of the classroom. It's always the focus from 60% to 70%. Always that little area right there. The worst students, because nobody is allowed to get below, 50% or 60%. Literally, that's a rule in most schools if you didn't know that. In most schools, you are literally not allowed to give a student for the first marking period, the first quarter, a grade below 50%. The thinking is that doing so would ruin them for the year, and then they would give up and they wouldn't try. So there's literally a rule that no matter what the kid's score is first quarter, in 90% of American high schools these days, there is a rule. If you get below 50% in the first quarter, you just give the kid a 50%. And it's enforced. So even though teachers do normally teach to the bottom of the section because of that, they are good teachers, they're good people, and they try to, when possible, accommodate the top end too. And with poetry, they can do that. They can reach the bottom end and still the top end of the class and get them prepared for the AP exam. They can make the curriculum fit. They can differentiate their lessons well with poetry. It lends itself to that. So this is one area where they do try to prep kids for the AP curriculum, and the AP standards sort of inform what goes on with poetry throughout the grades. What does the AP recommend? Well, AP literature exam, the curriculum for it is 9 units. 3 of them are poetry. One of them is 10 lessons long. One of them is 17, and the last one is 17 also. So we're talking 44 class periods each. And so 44 class periods each, that's what, roughly about 1400 minutes through the year. That's out of 7200 minutes per year normally. So 1400 out of 7200, you're roughly talking, about 1/7 of your classes there, a little bit more, maybe 1/6, 17% of your classes, maybe up to 20% of your classes. And in practice, it's even less, to be honest. Teachers, they often, when they visit poetry, they tend to follow the AP curriculum as much as possible, but they don't visit poetry as often as the AP curriculum really would recommend. And there are some very good reasons for this, right? Let's do 5 quick reasons here. Number one, teachers are scared of poetry a little bit. Why are they scared? Number two reason is because a teacher can turn out to be wrong. Poetry can embarrass you, right? If you're a teacher and you just miss the meaning of a word, or if you just miss something in the poem, and a kid happens to point that out, right? This was actually in a college class one time. I was in college class taking poetry class. I was like the only physics major there in all my literature classes. And the teacher hauls out Robert Herrick's The Vine, right? Robert Herrick's The Vine. And of course, this poem is about the poet's vine turning into a stock at the end of the poem, right? He wakes up from this dream of this beautiful woman, and he finds himself erect. And the professor, she got to the end of the line and she looked up, and nobody else in the class seemed to be expecting anything, but I looked at her and I was like, all right, go for it, talk about this, tell us what's going on here. And she blushed redder than a CCP flag. I mean, she was just completely scarlet, Harman Crimson and skipped over it completely, right? So poetry has the potential to embarrass you if you don't plan ahead, if you don't think ahead, if something jumps out at you, or if you miss something, poetry has a chance to embarrass you. So number one, teacher's scared of it. Number two, they're scared of it because they could be wrong, could be embarrassed. Number three, it's a little bit harder to assign as homework because teachers can feel effective assigning a novel as homework because they just say read for 20 minutes a night, 30 minutes a night, whatever in an AP class. And the kids can do that. The kids know how to sit down and do that. But the kids have no idea. If you give them, a poem by William Blake or a 12-liner from Emily Dickinson, and you say, spend 20 minutes, spend 30 minutes on this, reading this, the kids have no idea how to do that. They cannot analyze that. They read it in 90 seconds and then they're like, what do I do? I'm done. I read it. That's it. They have no idea how to do close reading, no idea how to pursue the meanings of the words, the etymology of the words, no idea how to track down antecedents, no idea how to profile a poem from multiple viewpoints and enjoy the ambiguity. None of that. None of that. They just don't. So they can't. That's harder for them, for teachers to assign as homework. Number four reason, it's harder vocabulary. So, like I said, teachers do use poetry as a way to reach both the bottom of the class and the top class. And it's they shy away from it a little bit though when it's harder vocabulary. So they are a little bit more reluctant to assign it as homework, a little bit more reluctant to dig in as far as they could into poetry because pretty soon you start running into the harder vocabulary problem. And number five, the teachers just don't like it as much. They really don't. They don't find poetry as fun and enjoyable as they do novels. And again, that comes back to the fact that a lot of the poetry that is in vogue and has been in vogue for a long time is really pretty bad. Not gonna lie, it's bad. All right. Not all of it. There's a ton of great poetry out there. And sometimes the same people who write a lot of the bad stuff also write a lot of good stuff. But the teachers don't necessarily, a lot of people don't necessarily know how to distinguish between the good and the bad, right? With Stephen King, it's a little easier. You read a book, it's pretty easy to tell if Stephen King is having a good day or having a bad day. Poetry, it takes a lot more work to see what's good and what's bad. Now let's look at what is in the curriculum, the content of the curriculum. That's sort of the structure of it. You've got these 1400 minutes per year. And what are you supposed to do with these 1400 minutes per year? The first thing on the AP curriculum's list is character analysis. I mean, this is interesting, right? Since lyric poetry is, and not narrative poetry, is by far the dominant form, but so be it. That's how the AP starts. They start off with character analysis in poetry. They recommend poems with characters, right? Death of a Hired Man. Actually, I don't think they recommend that. They recommend The Prodigal by Elizabeth Bishop and a couple other poems with characters in them. Then it talks about the shift from literal to figurative. That's great. The tropes, the turning away from literal meaning. Absolutely fantastic thing for them to cover. Then it talks about antecedents. It teaches kids about antecedents. Well, that's great, but that is a total fail because I can tell you again from 25 years of teaching in the classroom, kids do not know what the word antecedent means. Decades and decades in the classroom, they never know. They never know. Next on the curriculum is the AP curriculum, simile and metaphor. And then that's it. That's it. That's the entirety of the first unit, the first 10 lessons in the AP curriculum. It's not a whole lot there. But on the other hand, it could be much, much, much worse. And that one topic of turning away from the literal to the figurative, that is a huge topic, right? And that's a great topic. So it's a pretty good curriculum here so far. It really is. Recommended poems, they have Langston Hughes' Theme for English B, of course. Amazing. They have Elizabeth Bishop's The Fish and The Prodigal, as I just mentioned. They have Baca, Jimmy Santiago Baca's I Am Offering This Poem. This is a horrible poem. I think it is strictly inferior to Gary Soto's Oranges, which is a fantastic poem. And I think it's just a complete miss there by the AP curriculum to go with I Am Offering This Poem instead of Oranges. Just terrible there. They have Browning's My Last Duchess. They have Tennyson's Ulysses. And that's it. Those are all the poems that they recommend in their first unit in the official curriculum. Next, the next poetry unit. It's 17 periods long, getting a little bit longer now, and it starts off with explaining structure and the function of structure. This is fantastic. I love it. Great thing. Talks about stanzas, about lines, meter, and rhyme. This is all awesome. This is wonderful. You're thinking great. And then it hits you. Then it just, like a 2x4 to the face, there's this note. It literally says note, colon, in the middle of the AP curriculum at this point. And then it says, and I quote, "The AP exam will not require students to label or identify specific rhyme schemes, metrical patterns, or forms of poetry." Right. So they don't need to know iambic pentameter. They don't need to be able to name it. They don't need to be able to recognize a ballad verse. They don't need to be able to recognize a sonnet. They don't need to be able to recognize a sestina. They don't need to be able to distinguish the rhyme scheme of a Petrarchan sonnet from a Shakespearean sonnet. Yeah, that is just throwing out a ton of tools. Can you appreciate poetry without that? Sure, but can you imagine a physics class saying, oh, the students will not need to label or identify Newton's laws or the forms of an equation or the pattern in the gravitational and electric force laws, which is based on geometry, of course. Now, you can't imagine a physics class saying that, because that would be nuts. That would be tossing out deep insights. That would be tossing out tools that allow you to work with your subject. I'll read it again just so you don't think I'm making it up. I don't know. Here we go. Note, the AP exam will not require students to label or identify specific rhyme schemes, metrical patterns, or forms of poetry. Okay, so, you know, clearly a huge de-emphasis on meter then. And so how are you gonna appreciate something like in Yeats's Leda and the Swan, right, where he breaks the meter a couple times and the shuddering engendered in the loins there? How are you going to appreciate that? Right, you've got this amazing iambic pentameter going on, perfectly metrical, and then right when he uses the word loosening, right, the verse loosens, and he uses the other words. There's a second time in there. Staggering, right? Staggering. The girl is staggering, and it's just like the meter is staggering, and the AP curriculum is telling us, oh no, we don't care about that. You don't need to look about any, you know, metrical patterns. Nothing like that is important. Okay, then. So the curriculum then goes on to talk about multiple meanings, connotations, hyperbole, spends a lot of time on metaphor, some time on personification, a little bit on illusion, doesn't mention rap music at all, talks about diction a little bit. Listen, if you're not aware, rap music and its elusive play, the illusions there are amazing. You should go look at that if you haven't already. The only new poem that they mention, besides those other ones that were used in the first poetry unit, the only new poem they mention here is EBB's How Do I Love Thee, sonnets from the Portuguese, and nothing else. No new poems are introduced in the official curriculum. The last unit is 17 class periods long again, and here they cover irony, paradox, juxtaposition. They don't talk about, you know, chiasmus or anaphora or anything like that. They do talk about symbols, don't really cover assonance or consonants specifically, and then that's it. No new poems are recommended. One spot of good news is that on the AP exam, the the overall percentage at the end is supposed to be 36 to 45% poetry of the exam. So that's a good chunk, right? That's a good chunk. That's more than the actual minutes of the class in the school year. So good there, but and also I'll point out that's way bigger than the current American readership, right? If you're talking, only 11% of people are reading poetry, but your literature exam is 36 to 45% poetry, it shows you that the problem is not that they're putting emphasis on poetry or that they're not putting emphasis. They are putting emphasis on poetry. That's not the problem. The problem must be how they're doing it or which type of poetry they're putting the emphasis on, right? And I think it's both. I think it's both. The advanced placement exam does not give an exhaustive list or anything like that of poems that could be on the test. It mentions a few in the curriculum that I pointed out to you, but then there is no official required reading list or anything like that. However, the National Endowment for the Humanities does jump in here. They do try to fill in the gap a little bit. They publish a thing called 21 Poems for AP Lit, and this comes out every few years. The most recent one, I think it's from 2020. The 21 poems they have on there, they have Arnold's Dover Beach, Gwendolyn Brooks' We Real Cool, Elizabeth Bishop In the Waiting Room, Browning's My Last Duchess, Dickinson's The Alabaster Chambers, they have Donne, Valediction, Forbidding Morning, they have Proof Rock on there from Eliot, they have Carolyn Forché's Colonel, they have Frost's Mending Walls, Haydn, Robert Haydn, Those Winter Sundays. Ooh, what a great poem. I mean, these are all great poems, to be honest, though. They did choose, the National Endowment for Humanities did choose some good ones here. Oh, then there's Hughes, Let America Be America Again. Okay, so maybe check that. But then Keats, Ode on a Grecian Urn. All right, Marvel to His Coy Mistress. Wilfred Owen with this drawing down of blinds, Stulti Decorum Est. And Bells for John Whiteside's Daughter from Ransom, John Crow Ransom. They just list all the Shakespearean sonnets. It's interesting. Shelley's Ozymandias, Stephen's Sunday Morning. Ooh, a little spicy there from the AP curriculum. Sunday Morning from Stevens. And Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night from Dylan Thomas. William Carlos Williams, Danse Russe. That's unfortunate. Yeats's The Second Coming. There, that's it. And I did jot down some notes from the earlier version in 2016, mostly the same people. They had Auden Bishop, they had Coleridge in 2016, Rita Dove, Hart Crane, Brooklyn Bridge from Hart Crane, of course. They had HD, something from HD on there. That's unfortunate. John Donne, Dunbar. Herrick, they had, I think, To the Virgins from Herrick. Get a little spicy. That's the other thing. That's the other thing about these high school poetry curriculum and the high school teachers out there. They are terrified of doing a sexy poem. They cannot even, wrap their heads around the topic of sex and stuff in covering a poem in class. And to some extent, I get that, right? The legal environment out there is pretty scary. But you know what? Sometimes you have to be brave. Sometimes you have to be brave. I have had a ton of success, for example, with two poems, with Millay's I Being Born a Woman and Distressed by All the Needs and Notions of My Kind, and Moved by Your Propinquity to Find Your Person Fair and Feel a Certain Zest, blah, 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 blah. That one, right, where she basically just has sex with a guy and says, don't get all big on yourself. I find this frenzy insufficient reason for conversation when we meet again. Kids love that poem, right? They eat that up. They absolutely adore that poem. And then, Herrick's poem, right? Upon Scobble, once lit's enough to let adultery in. They love that poem too. So the potential is there. The kids will absolutely adore these things, but you have to be a little bit brave, right? And sex is such a taboo topic in the high school these days that teachers are just terrified to touch it. And honestly, I can understand that given the legal climate out there. I can understand that. But when we're looking at why your audience leaves you, that's one reason why, because they're a little bit they the kids can see that some of these topics are there in literature. They see them in the bookshelves, if nothing else, even if their school won't touch it, even if they don't see it in class, they know that novels can have sex in them, and kids are interested in that stuff, especially since kids are hardly ever having sex on their own compared to what they used to anymore anyway. So they don't know that that's in poetry though, and the teachers definitely do not point that out to them. But yeah, just to finish that 2016 list, so Herrick is on there, but and it's to the virgins, to make the most of time. Then you got Houseman, Robert Lowell, Claude McKay, Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven was on there in 2016. Somewhere Dana is applauding, and Richard Wilbur is happily nodding along. Plath, Rutke, Tennyson, Stevens, Whitman. By the way, Wilbur was on the actual exam itself. They had the juggler from William in 2000, Wilbur from Richard Wilbur in 2016. Other poets they've actually had on the actual exam, or for the poetry prompt anyway, in the exam that they release. Derek Walcott in 2015, Wilbur in 2016, Rachel Harper, Olive Senior, P.K. Page, and I in 2021, the man with the saxophone. So, yeah, four out of the last six female poets. And four out of the last four female poets. And interesting, St. Lucia, America, America, Canada, Japanese slash Native American, although I was American. No Ocean yet, no Ocean Vuong. I expect him to be on the AP exam real soon, though. Maybe after Time as a Mother comes out next year. We will see. So, what can we take away from all this? Like I said, the interest is there. What is missing, the emphasis is there too, right? They are spending some time. 1400 minutes out of 7200 minutes is not a huge amount, but it's definitely not nothing. It is something. It's significant. And the AP literature exam is up to 45% poetry. I mean, that's almost half. So the emphasis is there. Poetry is still being covered. It's not that poetry is not being covered. That's not why you're losing 90% of your audience. It must be how it's being presented, and it must be the actual content that is being presented, which poems and how they are being taught. I think it's both. I think that people love rhyme. I think that people love meter. I think that a lot of kids, especially sometimes the more introverted ones, really love rules, right? They really love having a form to work with, and that's just not there in the curriculum. So those are the techniques, right, that are missing: the form, the rhyme, the craftsmanship emphasis, that's missing. And then just need to pick better poems. And you need to talk about the cool stuff that is in the poems, right? You need to not be afraid to talk about sex and sexual relationships in these poems, and not just in a bad way, right? Teachers will be happy to include poems about rape. They will be happy to include poems about survivors of sexual abuse. Happy to include that, right? But a poem like I said, Being Born a Woman in Distress, that not going to make it in. So I think that the content and the poems that are chosen need to change too, to avoid losing 90% of your audience. And that's it for today. Tomorrow we will be back, and we will be talking about some of the craziness that's going on in the world. We had the giant Facebook shutdown or outage yesterday. And we have China continuing to just ban everything and threaten Taiwan, all kinds of crazy stuff going on there. We'll talk about that, and we will work in a little bit more poetry tomorrow, or even 36 to 45% poetry tomorrow, because we have an interesting new development there. I will talk to you soon. Don't forget to subscribe. Take care.